The Sloth Sports Show on Anchor.fm, with weekly episodes highlighting and breaking down the biggest stories across sports. Make sure to keep up with the latest episodes and breaking news on Twitter by following at Sloth Sports Show, and keep up to date with the latest breaking news around the NFL. The official site of the show, knoble87.wixsite.com/SlothSportsReport. And now, here's your host, Cole Noble.
What is going on, everyone? Welcome to the Slaw Sports Show. I'm your host, Cole Noble, a.k.a. Slaw. And it's not Friday. It's not Slaw Sports Show Saturday. No, today is Thursday. And today we have a special guest joining the show for this weekly episode of the Slaw Sports Show. So we're doing it on Thursday today. Got a vacation coming up over the weekend. So we're getting the show in today on Thursday. So thank you all for tuning in and joining today's episode. And like I said, we have a special guest for today, so I want to go ahead and welcome in Miles Garrett to the show. He is an Elon alum and a good friend, and you know, like you see there, reporter at WSBT 22 and an Atlanta super fan. So Miles, welcome to the Sloth Sports Show.
How's it going? Thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's great. It's a pleasure. And so Miles, I just real quick, just because, in case any of the fans don't know anything, don't know your story, just go ahead and real quick, tell us about who you are, what you do, and what you've been doing.
Sure, yeah, I'm a news reporter at WSBT 22, which is a local news station in South Bend, Indiana. And for those of you that don't know where that is, that's where University of Notre Dame is. I was originally here as a sports reporter reporting on pretty much all things Notre Dame athletics, some high school stuff here as well. Before that, I was down in Macon, Georgia as a news and sports reporter. Like Cole was saying, originally from Atlanta, from the Atlanta suburban area, big Atlanta sports fan. And before that, graduated from Elon in 2018, and here we are.
And so that's part of, what I want to talk about first with you, Miles, working with Notre Dame and Notre Dame football. And I think, a lot of changes, I think, are going to come for the team next year and, this coming season. And I believe it got announced today when their season's going to start up. But losing, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, their main leader on defense, and on offense, their all-time winningest quarterback in Ian Book. So what is this team, you think, going to look like going into this coming season for Notre Dame football?
Yeah, I mean, you said it's definitely going to look a lot different. You're talking about a class that has the most wins pretty much ever in Notre Dame football history, which is saying quite a lot. This is a team that got 10 wins, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, three of the last four seasons, two playoff appearances, and like you said, Ian Book, the winningest quarterback of all time at Notre Dame, getting drafted by the New Orleans Saints. Pretty relatively high, also, if I had to say so myself. But it's definitely going to be a new look. Notre Dame sort of reached that point now, I think. I know a lot of people may not think this because Notre Dame sort of has this, sort of aura of, it's Notre Dame. They get to the playoff, they get blown out, that sort of thing. They don't play real opponents and that kind of stuff. But I think they've reached the point now, especially with the last 4 years under Brian Kelly, where they're starting to now have that consistency in recruiting that can get them to those stable top five, not only finishes, but starts every single year, where they're always in that conversation as one of the top five teams in the country year in, year out. And I think this past recruiting class showed that, and their future recruiting classes showed that. They're at the quarterback level. They've got Jack Cohn. He's a guy that was the quarterback for Wisconsin in the Rose Bowl. So some big game experience there. He's the favorite to be the starter for the Irish. Drew Pine is a guy who's been in the system now for 2 years. He's expected to be the backup, but the real headliner and who a lot of people should keep their eye on is Tyler Buckner. He's the true freshman quarterback. Ian Book's number 12. He looked probably the most impressive of the three in the spring game that just happened a few weeks ago. And he was a pretty highly touted recruit. So there's a reason why he's probably going to play and not have a redshirt this season. From what I've seen, looks like he's going to be the future of that position. And on the defensive front, new defensive coordinator Marcus Freeman, he lost a lot of talent, but he does have a lot of talent coming back. Myron Tagovailoa-Mosa, the cousin of Tua, Going to sort of headline that defensive front. And Kyle Hamilton, Georgia native, is most likely going to be a top 10 pick in the NFL draft next year. 6'4" safety with just unbelievable talent should headline that defense. So, yeah, I mean, they'll go back to playing an independent schedule next year. They won't be in the ACC anymore. But I don't think that's something that will hurt them, because you can make a very strong argument that Notre Dame has played tougher schedules when they play an independent schedule. I mean, this past season, the ACC, let's face it, their toughest opponent was Clemson. And, I mean, North Carolina was ranked. They beat a very good – I mean, it's up for debate how good North Carolina was. They were top 25 when they played them. So, you know, they beat them pretty handily. But, you know, this season you've got some tougher opponents going back to the independent level of play. Again, a lot of ACC play as well. You know, you're going to play Clemson again. I believe Clemson again. I'll have to look at the schedule. But, yeah, it should be a tough schedule. They'll finally play USC, so we'll see what they can do and maybe get back to the playoff.
Yeah, and, you know, we just talked about and mentioned some of the players they lost, but, you know, they are bringing a lot back for this team, and it will be interesting to see, you know, like you said, now back in the independent schedule outside the ACC, but still playing some tough opponents, the USC and also Clemson. So it's going to be interesting to see how Ryan Kelly really gets this entire team and squad together with, you know, like I said, losing top two leaders, I would say, on offense and defense, and Jeremiah and Ian Book. And looking at, you know, I would say the big four, really, in my opinion, of their draft picks this year. And I would say Liam Eichenberg, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, Ian Book, and Tommy Tremble, I think, are really the standouts for me when I was going through the draft process, going through my prospect rankings and, you know, just the entire draft. And I feel like all four of those guys landed in great spots. And obviously, I think Jeremiah was the big one, because at 52, I said it was a huge steal, probably the arguably biggest steal the entire draft. Him landing with the Cleveland Browns, the team I said the entire, you know, all my mock drafts that they should have drafted in the first round. And then, you know, the concerns came out, the injury reports finally came out after the draft, and all the medicals for him, and that's kind of where we saw the reason for that slide. But with those four guys I mentioned, who do you think will end up having the biggest impact on their NFL roster? You know, probably let's start now in their rookie year. Not, you know, look too forward into their career, but right now, going into their rookie year, which one of these four guys do you think will have the biggest impact?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. I mean, it's he was supposed to be a top 15 to 20 pick before this medical report came out, and I sort of compare it a little bit, maybe not at the same talent level, but sort of when Jalen Smith fell from Notre Dame a few years back, he was arguably a top five prospect at that time, but there was some concern about his ACL, and now he's a primetime starter for the Dallas Cowboys. So I think we're going to see something similar with Jeremiah. He's landing in a great situation, as you said, in Cleveland with a defense that I don't know if could get any better, but they did this offseason. You know, having guys like Clowney, Myles Garrett there, and, you know, just a lot of talent on the defensive front. You know, Denzel Ward, very good defensive players. Adding a linebacker of his caliber to that, I think, had a lot of pressure on him to sort of start immediately and do that, especially getting taken as late as he did. He didn't have sort of that first round pressure to sort of get on the field and make an impact immediately. But he's got the talent to do so. So I think he definitely has the ability to do that. You know, I mean, Ian Book obviously is a big name, but, you know, I don't see him personally being a starter in the National Football League. I can see him being, you know, one of the journeyman quarterbacks that sort of floats around the league as a backup for quite some time. But that being said, the Saints are a great fit for him. It's the team that was talking to him for a very long time during the draft process, and obviously Drew Brees out the door, and they kind of flip-flop too. It's kind of funny. Drew Brees is going to be an analyst now for Notre Dame football, and Ian Book now going to the Saints. But, you know, he'll have guys like Jameis Winston and forget about the other guy, the wide receiver turning quarterback. Yeah, Taysom Hill. Call him a quarterback if you'd like. But, yeah, he guys like that, Sean Payton, obviously a very good football mind to learn from. So, yeah, I mean, and then you got the offensive linemen, like guys like Liam Eichenberg and Aaron Banks, who who also landed in some pretty good positions. You know, the Buccaneers are very, very well equipped right now. And, you know, Tristan Wirfs last year was a great pickup on the offensive line. They've showed that they can draft offensive linemen very well. So Liam Eichenberg is, it was a guy that I thought was going to warrant a first round pick. He ended up almost making it in there with the second round. And Notre Dame sort of turned to this, you know, there's an argument for tight end U, but I think there's also a lot of argument for O-line U. You know, you've got a lot of talent that's come there in the past. His name's, for some reason, escaping me. He's the best offensive lineman in football right now with the Indianapolis Colts. You might have to help me out on this one. I don't know why his name is escaping me. I'll have to come back to that one here in a second. But, yeah, Notre Dame has been sort of filtering out these offensive linemen for a long time now, and I think guys like Aaron Banks and Liam Eichenberg are going to sort of add to that.
Yeah, I think Liam Eichenberg arguably might have the biggest impact out of these four guys, that are on my list. I mean, I know that Jeremiah...
Quentin Nelson. I apologize. Quentin Nelson.
Oh, yeah, Quentin Nelson. But I know that Liam Eichenberg, I believe he will have more of an impact on the Miami Dolphins than Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah will have on the Browns, in my opinion. That's my, you know, bold take at it, looking at these four players. But I think just adding, you know, another huge offensive lineman and a young guy, and not even for this year, but throughout his career and throughout contributing to his team's success, having another guy up front to protect Tua in Miami and a guy like Eichenberg is going to be huge. And like you said, going at 42, he was another guy who could have gone the first round and in an Oakland Trophy finalist, you know, a finalist for best offensive lineman in college football. And falling to 42, going over to Miami.
Yeah, there is an argument, as you were saying, that, you know, obviously the Dolphins took Jalen Waddle in the top 10. You know, there was an argument that they should take an offensive lineman in the top 10. And obviously they didn't do that. So, getting him there is a position of need. So, you know, he's a guy that can start right away.
Yeah, and he's a guy that, you know, tagging him along with Austin Jackson, who they drafted in the first round last year. And, you know, like, I really would have liked to see them with that second pick. You know, granted, the board didn't fall out that way, but I would have loved to see Elijah Vera Tucker end up in Miami and just be that guard they need. But getting Eichenberg in the second round is even better, I think. And they're still able to add Jalen Phillips to their defensive line with that second pick in the first round. So, all in all, it panned out perfectly for the Miami Dolphins. And also, I think that Carolina Panthers at the 83rd pick, getting Tommy Tremble, he's a guy who was one of the best blocking tight ends that I had, you know, scouted and looked at going into the draft this year. And that's an underrated part of the game, and especially at that position. Now you think about guys like Kyle Pitts coming in that don't even block half the time anyways when you look at the film on them. But, you know, Tommy definitely does, and that's going to be an underrated part of their offense, having him whenever he's in the game, you know, on those heavy run situations, heavy goal line situations, being able to have an extra guy on hands to block is going to be huge for the Panthers too.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, as you said, he wasn't a big pass catcher for Notre Dame. Michael Mayer sort of stole that spotlight, and he's probably going to eventually be a first or second round pick in a couple of years here. But Tommy Tremble, yeah, it definitely is going to make Christian McCaffrey and Sam Darnold smile with his ability to sort of add that dimension to the game. And I love what Matt Rhule is currently doing with Carolina, because he's a good offensive mind, and having more blockers, the better, especially with guys like McCaffrey and Sam Darnold, who's never really had protectors in his career.
Excuse me. Looking at the NFL as a whole, just real quick, your thoughts. Is Tampa Bay going to do it again?
Say one more time, sorry.
Is Tampa Bay going to do it again?
Well, I haven't seen any evidence to support another team doing it. I mean, you see Kansas City sort of retool their offensive line, but I mean, Tampa Bay is bringing every single person back from that Super Bowl roster, so. For me, it's barring any unforeseen injury, I don't see any team taking them down right now. You have so much turmoil in Green Bay at the moment. I apologize for that picture behind you at the moment. But, that's really the only NFC team, you know, at this point in time. You know, obviously you have so many things that can happen during the season. You know, surprise team that starts catching fire at the right time. But it's pretty hard to say right now in the NFC. I mean, The Vikings are bound to rebound a little bit. You look in the NFC North, the NFC East is still unpredictable. It's still kind of a mess, really. Washington, we don't know what we're going to see. Ryan Fitzpatrick's the quarterback right now. And, the NFC South, you've got Tampa Bay and really no one else at this point. Atlanta's sort of in this weird rebuild, we're not rebuilding thing. The Saints are completely starting over, it appears. They're in cap hell as well. And, it's sort of just a mess. I mean, the NFC West really looks like the only challenger to Tampa Bay, with all four teams being pretty competitive, and they might just sort of kill themselves during the season. The worst team in that division right now looks to be the Arizona Cardinals, and they don't look to be that bad right now. They had a huge offseason with adding guys like J.J. Watt on the defense and, DeAndre Hopkins coming back and Kyler Murray a little bit more comfortable in this offense now. And you have the Rams with Matthew Stafford, who is probably going to be an MVP favorite coming into this season. So it's hard to tell right now. The 49ers are returning everybody that was hurt last season. I mean, this is still a Super Bowl roster that they had. Who knows when Trey Lance is going to end up playing. But when Jimmy Garoppolo is healthy, this team's a Super Bowl team. So it's hard to predict. But right now, I'd say Tampa Bay is the favorite, and whoever comes out of the NFC West.
Yeah, and we were, flashback, before Tampa Bay really signed Tom Brady, I would say, all the talk was Kansas City is just going to run through the entire league year after year for the next 5 to 10 years, especially after they gave Mahomes that contract. And now Kansas City is not really a team we're really talking about anymore, because they're just sitting right there at that upper echelon. But it definitely does seem...
And they're not going anywhere. I mean, let's not confuse that. It's not like they're going anywhere, but... Tampa Bay really exposed them a little bit in the Super Bowl. And, you can make the case that the MVP of that game was Todd Bowles, the defensive coordinator, who just made Patrick Mahomes uncomfortable all game long. So, again, they're not going anywhere. They retooled their offensive line. So, it's Patrick Mahomes is going to be here for 15 more seasons.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm not saying that Kansas City is going anywhere. I'm just saying they're still at that, top tier echelon, you would say. But it definitely does seem like, Tampa Bay is just still a sliver above them, even after what they did, because of the fact they brought everybody back and then some with what they added through the draft. And, they still haven't, they didn't really make any offseason additions, but getting all the draft picks in, they added a guy like Giovanni Bernard, who that's going to help out Tom Brady immensely. Having a guy that can actually catch a ball out of the backfield is going to put a smile on Tom Brady's face, day one.
For sure.
And it's just Tampa Bay just seems like that team, unless, Green Bay pulls something out of nowhere and brings Rodgers back and starts making some last minute moves, which I'm not personally going to rule out, but looking more and more unlikely as the days go along. But Tampa Bay, they definitely look like, they could be that team. Again this year, until someone else comes up and challenges them. But Kansas City definitely still up there, and I mean, as of right now, I'd say we'd probably end up getting a rematch.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see anything else to disagree with it. I mean, the AFC, the Bills are on the come up, so they could potentially be a threat. They addressed a really strong need as far as the pass rush is concerned in the draft. Again, Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, they're still there. So that's still a very strong team coming out of the AFC. And who knows, maybe the Browns might finally put it together. They've got a Super Bowl roster. I mean, it is what it is. They just need to execute it. I mean, they have Chubb at the peak of his powers. They've got Baker Mayfield finally playing with some command. And, that defense I think you make the case of the best defense in football right now, maybe behind Tampa Bay. So if they can keep it together, then who knows? I mean, the Ravens are still there, and the Bengals are on the come up. I wouldn't call them a playoff team yet, but I mean, again, everybody's getting better, so you never know.
So while we're in the NFL, we'll just go ahead and jump right to it. And we see it on your shirt, and it says it below you. You're an Atlanta super fan, which of course means an Atlanta Falcons fan, and that's the talk of the whole town right now, is the Atlanta Falcons and their star franchise leading wide receiver, Julio Jones. What are your thoughts on the situation, Miles? Is Julio going to go, or is he staying?
Well, I think that phone call by Shannon Sharpe indicates that he is, in fact, out of here. And now that that call has come out, it sort of points to what's been happening all along. It looks like the Falcons and Julio had sort of had this sort of arranged for quite some time under the guise of cap issues, which it still is. I mean, the Falcons are in cap hell right now, and losing Julio Jones would sort of alleviate a little bit of that cap hit. But it appeared before that call was made, like it was going to be under that guise, because I think a lot of Falcons fans could get behind the idea or the notion that Julio, his days in Atlanta might be numbered because of the cap hit and because of his age. You know, just be all those things sort of coinciding together. The call, I think, just made it seem, you know, like Julio has this beef against Atlanta, which I don't know if he does. Maybe he does. But it was very out of character for who he has been for his entire career. He's always stayed out of trouble. He's always been very great with the media, very great with the fans, that type of thing. So I think it just came across the wrong way a little bit. But regardless, there was a report today that showed that Julio Jones, there's a first-round pick on the table currently for Julio Jones. If that's the case, I think it's impossible to say no if you're the Atlanta Falcons front office, and impossible to sort of dispute that if you're an Atlanta Falcons fan. I mean, again, he's 32 years old. He really can never stay healthy anymore. He gives you about 8 to 9 games a season and misses the rest. And again, it's not like it'd be, I mean, obviously Julio Jones is one of the greatest Falcons of all time. It'd be a huge loss just in that regard. And he's still, when healthy, he's a top three receiver in this league. It's just getting him healthy. But as far as his production is concerned, it makes a little bit more sense why Kyle Pitts was that pick, just to sort of replace the production that you're going to lose when you lose a Julio Jones, and sort of replacing him with another freak-type athlete who can catch balls and do sort of the same things that Julio did. So... Again, it all depends on the return. From what I'm seeing right now, I'd say a 99% chance that Julio Jones played his last game as an Atlanta Falcon. You know, if that return ends up being a number one pick, then I can get behind that.
Excuse me. You mentioned the tweet from this morning. I actually got it pulled up on the stream so everyone on YouTube can see it. It's from Diana Rossini with ESPN. She said the Falcons have discussed several trade offers for Julio Jones, including an offer for a future first-round pick, and the sense around the league is that a trade could go down as early as next week. So some people are saying, like, you know, Diana Rossini said this morning, that offers have included a future first-round pick. I don't know if people are just putting that out there to encourage teams to come out and, you know, saying, you know, other teams are doing it, we need to do it too. Because as the day went on, it looked like the consensus is a second and third pick for Julio Jones, which for a guy who, given his age, given his durability, is still a top three wide receiver in the National Football League today. With anything about him, I would say. So giving up a second or third round pick for this guy, there's not first round picks getting drafted who are even as good as Julio Jones. And there haven't been since Julio Jones. So why is... even second and third, even a first, in my opinion, why would a team not call immediately and get, you know, I feel like 30 out of the 32 teams should be in the market to land Julio Jones. And I feel like there's not as much activity, I think, right now as you would think, you know, given this trade can't happen until after June 1st anyways, with, you know, the contract situation, the cap situation. But I just don't understand why more people aren't picking up the phones and calling for Julio Jones right now.
Yeah, you would think that'd be the case. My argument behind that is just the level of talent you're seeing out of wide receivers in the draft now. I mean, it's very hard to miss on wide receivers, and it's becoming such a deeper and deeper class almost every single year. I mean, last year you saw what Justin Jefferson did. You know, CeeDee Lamb looks like he's going to be great. You know, this season, guys like Jamar Chase, Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, you know, all these guys who just look like superb wide receiver prospects. I think that's part of the reason, you know, these guys are sort of cycling almost every single year. Yes, you don't have those freaks like Julio Jones that are different. I mean, he is a difference maker. But the only way I can see, you know, a team offering up a first-round pick for Julio Jones is if you're already at that Super Bowl level and you can afford to lose a first round pick to get you maybe 2, maybe 3 years of production out of Julio. You know, when I say that, you know, it's weird. For me, you'd think that a no-brainer option for this would be the Green Bay Packers. You know, it seems like a very obvious choice. Julio Jones wants to win. Aaron Rodgers is upset. He wants a wide receiver. It seems like a very obvious fit. It doesn't seem like that's going to be the case. But what I'm seeing, you know, it's the Patriots, it's the Titans that are sort of the favorites here. But even saying that, those two moves don't make a lot of sense for me if I'm Julio Jones. You know, he says he wants to win. The Patriots, we don't really know what they are at this point. Last year, obviously, they had a lot of opt-outs and free agent signings. There wasn't a training camp and whatnot. But it's very hard to sort of say that the Patriots are a Super Bowl contender right now. I mean, you know, again, maybe give Bill Belichick the benefit of the doubt of just last season sort of being an anomaly. But to go from that to that, and then you talk about the Tennessee Titans. I mean, the Falcons arguably took their Kyle Shanahan. He was the mastermind behind their offensive play calling. So who knows what that offense is going to look like. You know, you're going to tell me that Ryan Tannehill is a better quarterback than Matt Ryan? I kind of have a hard time agreeing with that. You know, I mean, they're similar quarterbacks, but I wouldn't go and mention to say Tannehill is a better quarterback. Yes, he's put up better stats, but he's also had the benefit of Derrick Henry in the backfield and a pretty decent offensive line to go off of. So, again, it's very difficult to sort of dissect that, but those two seem to be the favorite options right now. And, again, another argument regarding Julio Jones is, you know, as you recall, a couple of years ago, Mohamed Sanu was the number two wide receiver for Atlanta behind Julio before Calvin Ridley got there, and the Patriots gave up a second pick for him. So you're going to tell me that Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu are the same player that warrant a second-round pick? I have a hard time sort of agreeing with that. And as you mentioned, there's the cap space issue as well. Nothing can happen after June 1st. I'm of the belief that there is a deal that is already in place and it just hasn't been announced yet. And, you know, I think maybe this first-round pick has already been decided and it's just these leaks are coming out right now. I think this deal has been in place before the phone call came out. So I think it's something that's already bound to happen that we're just waiting for the June 1st announcement.
Yeah, and I think I'm fairly sure this is the same situation that's going down. You know, like the Eagles, when they said they were planning to release Alshon Jeffrey, but they're, you know, stating it as a June 1st move, so technically it's still there until after June 1st. So I think if a deal was in place, they could still announce it, like as of today, but it'll just be like a June 1st designation. So I don't think anything's quite done yet, per se. I just think, you know, they're putting stuff out there now to make it more of a market than Atlanta thinks they're getting right now from what they've getting in the calls. So that's why I think they're putting that, you know, they already have an offer with a first round pick involved in there. You know, I mean, maybe they do, but at the same time, giving up a first round pick for Julio Jones, you know, for a team like the Green Bay Packers or the Tennessee Titans, the LA Rams, San Francisco 49ers, adding Julio Jones to that offense, just go ahead and makes the entire team a Super Bowl contender, which, in my opinion, is that's what you're trying to do. That's, you know, what you're trying to do in the National Football League is win a Super Bowl. So if you can give up a second and a third or a first for a Super Bowl now, would you not rather do that than, you know, get a guy in the first round or second, third round next year that's going to take another year until he develops into a full-time starter? Why not go ahead and chase that Super Bowl now, which, you know, I feel like it's what Tampa Bay did, what they did in the offseason last year. They chased that Super Bowl now, and then now they're building off of that and have a dynasty created. Why not, you know, the Green Bay Packers add Julio Jones to their offense and, you know, win a Super Bowl, go to a Super Bowl? And, the you know, the LA Rams wouldn't surprise me if they go uber aggressive as well. I mean, they've, you know, traded first-round picks like crazy already. You know, Jalen Ramsey was, you know, two or three first-round picks. They just gave up two more for Matthew Stafford. You know, if the number's down to second and third rounds for Julio Jones, it wouldn't surprise me to see the Rams be aggressive and come out and get them. And the same thing I would say is also the case with what we saw last year with Chris Ballard and the Colts. You know, before the draft, he traded that first round pick and got DeForest Buckner on that defense. You know, why not do that and trade next year's first round and get Julio Jones to add with Carson Wentz, T.Y. Hilton on that offense? just I'm in the strong mindset of adding Julio Jones now should be the top priority at, you know, for the majority of the teams. And obviously it's sounding like, you know, Julio doesn't have a no trade clause. So he doesn't really have the right to say, you know, where he wants to go to. But at the same time, the Atlanta Falcons, they're not going to ship him to Houston. You know, they're going to do Julio Jones right. Because that's just where the situation's got to, and that's where the relationship is. It's not, you know, a Calvin Johnson and the Lions type of situation where the two sides are just hating each other and they just move on at whatever cost. I think Atlanta's going to do right and honor the fact that Julio does want to go to a contender, and maybe it's not in the NFC. Maybe, you know, Atlanta is smart about that, trades them, you know, to the Tennessee Titans, to, you know, maybe the LA Chargers, the name that I think would be very intriguing for him. But Julio adding him to 30, you know, the top teams, I would say, adding Julio just alone puts them over the top, I would say, in level of offense. And I would say probably 6 or 7 teams right now off the top of my head.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you brought up a good team, the LA Chargers. You know, I mean, there's a saying in National Football League now, you know, that the way to win Super Bowls is really work off that rookie quarterback contract when you don't have to pay them. You can sort of surround them with these great weapons before you got to pay in that big contract. So if that's what you're talking about, this is the perfect time to do it. You know, give him that weapon, pair him up with Keenan Allen, get that, you know, pair him with that offensive line now that you're just starting to upgrade with the first round talent. So, you know, that's a team that makes a lot of sense. But yeah, it's tricky. I feel like, you know, it could be this could go a lot of different ways, and we may not know about it until next week.
It could even just flat out turn around and bite us on the butt talking about it. Julio just could not produce. You know, if he goes to a different system, goes to a different team, and, you know, with his age, with, you know, the contract you have, I believe it's going to be like a 3-year, $60 million or maybe 30 million deal on that 3 years that, you know, that they'll have to, you know, incur with the contract during a trade. But
as you said, the grass isn't always greener. I mean, Julio Jones put up these numbers, became statistically the best single game receiver with averaging, you know, yards per game in NFL history with Matt Ryan. So, you know, I mean, it's hard to sort of dissect that we've never seen Julio with a different team, but, you know, statistically, Julio and Matt Ryan are one of the best pairings in NFL history. The stats back it up. So, you know, he can say he wants to win, but, you know, again, it's the grass isn't always greener. You never know what situation you might be diving into. The chemistry might not be there yet.
And like you said a few minutes earlier, just Green Bay is just, it seems like the perfect, you know, end all be all of their entire situation going on right now. If they want to make Rodgers happy, they want to make their team over the top and be a contender and get over the hump of the NFC Championship game, they can easily restructure Aaron Rodgers, give him an extension right now, you know, make him happy with an extension. And then that frees up cap space in itself. You know, you push money aside with that deal. You do the same thing with Devontae Adams, restructure his deal, restructure the guarantees, and restructure the salaries. The salary cap hit, you can free up that $15 million you need this year for Julio Jones, and boom, you have Devontae Adams, Julio Jones, and Aaron Jones all around Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, no, again, you hit the nail on the head. It seems like an obvious pairing and a way, I mean, the only way it seems like to me to sort of fix this fractured relationship with Aaron in the front office there. You know, maybe you include Jordan Love in that trade. I mean, Atlanta is going to be looking to move off that at some point. It appears that won't be this year or maybe even next year, given the way they restructured his contract. So, you know, that would be a trade piece to maybe have a developmental guy behind Matt for a couple of years. But yeah, I mean, it seems, like you said, it seems like an obvious fit that for some reason I just don't see happening, because it seems like it's just a, you know, excuse my language here, a pissing match between the two sides that just is going nowhere.
Yeah, and then a deal to get Julio with Green Bay, and like you said, giving up Jordan Love, that would be a perfect option for all parties and all things considered. You know, Green Bay moves on from him, clears up their quarterback you know, controversy that's going on, gives Rodgers a weapon. And then for Atlanta, you know, the whole talk during the draft at number four was whether they're going to go with a guy like Trey Lance or Justin Fields to sit and take over. Excuse me. oh, goodness, excuse me. Take over for Matt Ryan. And Jordan Love can definitely be that guy to take over.
There you go. yeah, no, I mean, it seems like a good fit. And, yeah, I mean, again, the Falcons not taking that quarterback. Justin Fields was obviously, you know, the hometown kid, someone who seemed like an obvious fit in Atlanta. But the Falcons didn't go with that option. Again, maybe that was taken with the knowledge that Julio Jones was not going to be a Falcon this upcoming season, and they obviously needed to sort of replace that production on the offensive side. Although it does kind of make me wonder why you wouldn't maybe, I mean, again, Kyle Pitts is a remarkable talent and good, you know, one of those guys that is just, you know, one of those freakish athletes that you can't miss on. But it also makes you wonder why maybe a guy like Ja'Marr Chase wasn't an option for the Falcons. If you're going that offensive weapon route, you know, they already have a guy like Hayden Hurst. So if you're losing a Julio option, why aren't you replacing him with another receiver? So Arthur Smith loves his tight end. So, I mean, I was always a fan of the Kyle Pitts pick, so I have nothing against it, and I think it was a good pick, even with Julio Jones gone. So we'll see what happens. And I don't think the Falcons are as far behind as a lot of people say they are. I think this is a team that has the chance to rebound pretty quickly. I think they just need to fix some things on the defense. The offense has never been an issue. It really never has. I mean, the offensive line could use some work, and I think that they're going to be there at this point. They've got two former first-round picks there last season who now have a full season under their belt and can maybe develop a little bit. But, you know, the issue's never been the offense. It's been the defense. And, you know, you now have DMP taking over the defense and maybe give them another draft. And, you know, teams can recover pretty quickly in the NFL. You can have teams that are at the bottom of the barrel that suddenly shoot their way up to the top. I mean, I'm not going to compare the Falcons to Tampa Bay, but Tampa Bay was one of the worst teams in the NFL. And then Tom Brady came along, and now they're the best team in the NFL. So transitions can happen very quickly.
Yeah, and it definitely seems that, you know, Arthur Smith, just listening to him already, you know, his pre-draft, post-draft interviews, you know, what he's doing, you know, the interviews he's having right now during OTAs, the guy sounds a lot like Bill Belichick. And I've always been very much high on Arthur Smith. You know, I thought he was the best coaching hire of this year's cycle and was really impressed with him. When he was in Tennessee, the work he did with that offense, I was really excited to see him come over now with the Atlanta Falcons. And granted, like you said, 99% chance they don't have Julio Jones this year. But nevertheless, I'm still excited to see what this offense is going to turn into under Arthur Smith and, you know, get it revamped back up this year. And that defense still needs work. You know, it's the Atlanta Falcons. They're always going to have the defense issues, in my opinion. But the defense still, you know, can do a little bit better. But offensively, I think there is a lot to like with Arthur Smith coming in and implementing that new offense. And especially, you know, adding in, we're going to pull up the picture here. You've retweeted it before. The picture of Mike Davis. You know, with the... The picture with the legs. You know, never skipping leg day. Looking like an absolute monster. He's not quite Derrick Henry in what Arthur Smith had in Tennessee. But Mike Davis had a great season last year with Carolina. And right now, he has the full workhorse role and load this upcoming season with Atlanta, because, you know, just that running back room is not there, you know, with Atlanta right now. So it's very much looking like a Tennessee Titans offense where Mike Davis is going to get, you know, upwards of 80 to 90% of the carries this season for the Atlanta Falcons, which might end up making him one of the most underrated backs in fantasy football and, you know, the division and the NFL in general. I just think there's a whole lot to like with this offense. And, you know, what are your thoughts on it just as a fan?
Yeah, I'd like to compare the Mike Davis signing a little bit to the Michael Turner signing, you know, over a decade ago. These are two guys that sort of have very similar career trajectories at this point when they were signed. They're both signed at almost the exact same age. Both of them were sort of that backup running back type role. They've had some promise, but it's never fully been explored yet. Both of them are big guys. You know, you look at their legs. Michael Turner was one of the biggest running backs I've ever seen as far as just his sheer leg. He was built like a fullback. And, you know, you look at guys like Mike Davis, maybe he's not as big as Michael Turner was. But I think they sort of the same nature. They sort of have this untapped potential that we haven't really explored yet because they've been sort of behind. Mike Davis was sort of backing up Christian McCaffrey. Obviously he got his time to shine a little bit, but you're right. I think that was a really underrated signing of this free agency period, Mike Davis, because Arthur Smith's going to run the ball. That's his offense. And, he's going to use Mike Davis a lot, whether that's catching balls out of the backfield or running. That's something we haven't seen out of the Falcons in a very long time since, Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman. It's been almost 5 years now since the Atlanta Falcons have had any semblance of a run game. So Mike Davis will add that dimension. As a fan, I was a fan of this hire, Arthur Smith. I'll be honest, I didn't know a whole lot about him before the hiring happened. I was part of the Eric Bieniemy fan club. He just seemed like the obvious choice. But the more I've read up on Arthur Smith and seen what he did in Tennessee, the more I like the hire. It seems like a perfect fit in Atlanta. And then you Terry Fontenot, the new GM for the Atlanta Falcons. He obviously knew how to do things down in New Orleans. So, if he can draft the same as he was helping draft in New Orleans, I think it's a perfect fit. The only problem with that is, he's definitely getting off to a bad start. Not necessarily a bad start, but maybe the fans, it's hard when one of your first moves as general manager could be parting ways with one of the best players in franchise history. Per that same report that you were just referencing, it appears that, again, we don't know if this one's accurate or not, but that report stated that Julio Jones didn't start getting upset until he heard that Terry was fielding calls. So that's not the best way to start off your general manager career. Things were looking great during the draft. I loved the draft. I think they had some great pickups, especially in the later rounds. Kyle Pitts, a guy that's very hard to miss on. So, I like what they're doing. I think it was good to not move off of Matt Ryan this quickly. He's 36 and he's never had an offensive coach. He's never had a top 10 defense. So I think it's time to still give him a shot. And quarterbacks are playing a little bit longer now. So I don't think it's 36 is like that death sentence now to where it's like, we're going to have to move off of them in 2 years. I think Matt's still got some juice left in him.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there. And Mike Davis, those quads. It's not quite A.J. Dillon in Green Bay, but those things, they can run through a man. They can run through a man, but all this Atlanta Falcons talk, made me choke a little bit back there a little bit. And speaking of choking Atlanta, let's segue to just keep talking about some Atlanta sports. Miles, the Atlanta Hawks last night, 57-44 lead at halftime.
Thank you. Yes, yes, yes. And silly me, I decided to talk some trash at halftime thinking the game was over because you'd think that would be a safe lead. That's Atlanta sports for you. They can never keep a lead to save their life. So it's a new series. I do like the Hawks in this series still. I think I still think they're going to come out on top in the series just because of, the way these two teams are. I think the Knicks are sort of built for the regular season. They're a Tom Thibodeau team. They're going to do well in the regular season and playoff start. I think the Hawks have too much firepower against this Knicks team. But, the series going back to Atlanta. Hopefully the fans will show out and, forget about that last game pretty quickly. Especially after the juice of game one, with the Hawks just, getting that last second shot by Trae Young. Nate McMillan did make some questionable substitution calls in that game. So, maybe that'll get fixed in game three. I'm not too concerned about the Hawks. The Hawks are a team that in these playoffs, at least, that I'm expecting them to win the series, but I'm not expecting them to go further than that. So anything after beating the Knicks would just be cake. I think I like the trajectory of the Hawks right now. I think they're on the come up, and I think that, they have potential to be a threat in the East right now. So it's just a matter of you know, building off what they have, maturing a little bit. They're so young. But you know, I've been encouraged by what I've seen, and you know, hopefully they'll forget about this next chapter in Atlanta blown leads from last night.
Yeah, and Trae Young this year especially has taken the leap, and you know, especially this week, he's really become the villain of New York. I mean, sold out Madison Square Garden for game one and game two, and he was taking the heat of all that sold out crowd, all the fans. I mean, a guy even spit at him yesterday. But Trae Young, I mean, he's taking it all. You know, 32 points in the first game. He had 30 points last night, and, you know, just didn't get the outcome that they had in the first game. But going in, you know, to their, you know, game three, like you said, now they're going over to the State Farm Arena. And I thought it was huge, you know, what they did the first game, stealing, you know, one of the first two games at MSG from the Knicks. I think it's going to be huge in this entire series, you know, winning that first one. You know, they couldn't win the second one, but just winning one of those first two was, you know, one of the keys I had for the Atlanta Hawks in this series. And they got that done in game one. And from here, they just got to go home and try to build up that home crowd that the Knicks had the first two games, build that up there at State Farm Arena, and, you know, try to get, you know, that on their side this time around for, what is it, I believe the next three games they'll have at home.
Yeah, I'll have to look at the schedule. I'm not quite sure myself. They're definitely going to need some more production on the John Collins. He didn't score a single point in game two. So you can't have a guy that's asking for a max contract in the offseason not scoring a single point in a playoff game. So, I mean, I'm expecting a lot out of him. Trae's been balling out. I mean, it wasn't yesterday's loss wasn't on him whatsoever. He played superbly. You know, just, I think some other guys need to step up a little bit in this series and, you know, maybe. Coach McMillan could maybe watch the substitutions a little bit because he made some questionable calls.
And I mean, I've been loving, you know, the playoffs so far in the NBA. Love the play-ins. That was a great idea. Loving the fact right now that my Milwaukee Bucks have the Heat right now on sweep watch, and you know they're playing. I believe right now, I don't know what you know the score was. We were up at halftime when I looked right before we went on live on the air, but. My Milwaukee Bucks are looking pretty good right now. You know, it's going to all determine who can beat the big three to come out of the East in Brooklyn, because when they're on, no one's stopping them as of right now in Brooklyn. And so let's segue here just, you know, for the, you know, the final few minutes we have for the show today to the MLB. And traditionally on the Slaw Sports Show, you know, I have a lot of friends that are huge baseball fans, but personally, I'm not that big into baseball. But my brother is an Atlanta Braves fan. You're an Atlanta Braves fan. And right now, the ESPN Week 8 Power Rankings has the Braves at 14 and no change right now as of, you know, their Week 7 rankings. But the breakout of Austin Riley right now, you're talking about it on Twitter. It seems to be real with what he's doing right now.
Yeah, you know, it's sort of similar to when he came up for the first time out of AAA. You know, he just had this tear where he was hitting home runs left and right. You know, obviously, I think it's baseball is tricky, and what he's doing right now is not sustainable. And I'm sure he's gone to slow down at some point, but it's sort of been the saving grace for this Braves offense. You know, you've had guys that have been out or underperforming. Marcell Ozuna is going to be out with the fractured finger, and he's a guy that sort of has been underperforming just a bit for the Braves. You know, he signed a big contract last year. He led the NL in home runs. Ronald Acuna Jr. obviously has been, you can make the case he's the National League MVP favorite right now. Freddie Freeman, not quite as hot as he's been, but still, he's Freddie Freeman. He's playing very well. But, you know, guys like Travis d'Arnaud for the season, that production needs to be replaced. Dansby Swanson looks like he's finally catching fire just a hair. Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of holes in this Braves offense, and really the bullpen's been the biggest issue for this team. You know, this is a team that had one of the best bullpens in baseball last year, and this season it's nowhere close to that. They had some signings and guys that they let go, guys like Mark Melanson, and you know, they signed some other guys. Goldsmith hasn't been quite as good this season for the Braves, so It's been sort of just a mixture of different things that haven't worked. I'm not too concerned right now because it still is pretty early in the season and baseball is such a long year. And usually the good teams start separating themselves a little bit later. June, I feel like, is really where you figure out where this team is and where they're going. And as of right now, the Braves are in position to take first place from the Mets. So sort of about where I expected, even given the injuries of this team. You know, they still are extremely talented and, you know, I think still should be the favorites of the East. Yeah, I think they're just going to get through some of these injuries and figure out who they are.
Yeah, and I'll pull up here just, you know, the current standings for, you know, the NL East right now with the Braves in it. And right now they're, you know, tied with the Marlins, and this was, you know, as of this morning, a game and a half back from the New York Mets. And the New York Mets right now, they're doing what they always do. They're in their you know, annual vacation to the IL, the entire group. And just what do the Braves need to do, you know, with the Mets imploding and all their, you know, team, you know, their team is just entirely getting hurt, like happens year after year. Here at this stretch, right, or, well, now we're nowhere near the stretch, but here right now, you know, with the Braves sitting, you know, game and a half back, from first place, what do you see from them that they need to do to come up and, you know, take the lead right now in this division?
Well, frankly, I think they just need to carry the momentum that they got from, you know, whipping up with the, I believe it was the Pirates they didn't sweep at home, but they scored a umpteen million runs against them, and it looked like they were sort of catching that fire a little bit, sort of figuring something out. You know, sometimes you need to have those series against those teams to just sort of let loose a little bit. You know, it was a series that you saw them play that it looked like they weren't so tight. They just looked a little bit loose, like they were last year, pretty much all of last year. They just looked like a team that was having fun out there and sort of carried that to almost every single game, no matter who the opponent was. So I'm just hoping that they carry that into this series. You know, they played very well against the Red Sox in their win yesterday. They fell short, but this is a series that I think the Braves really need to win to just sort of carry that momentum into June, get that going, get those early wins going so that they can sort of get a little streaky in June, to sort of establish themselves as still the team to beat in the East. So I think this series is going to be huge, especially with a team that's so banged up like the Mets. They need to win it. It's something they can't afford to, you know, have a series where they lose 2 out of 3 like they did just a couple weeks ago against the Mets. So they need to figure it out fast.
And just, it's exciting to seeing, you know, what, you know, the Braves are doing right now. And, you know, early in the year, it looked like, again, that they were going to have two MVP favorites in Freeman and Acuna. And obviously, you talked about, you know, Freeman's slowing down just a tad bit, or rather just Acuna is just continuing on that upward trajectory that he's, you know, been on his entire career. But another player that I've absolutely loved, and, you know, I just want to just throw it out there because I always have to every week, until he continues to ball out, until, unfortunately, gets injured, is Shohei Ohtani. Because that guy is just the essence of baseball, and I love him doing everything. And definitely, you know, when I go out to L.A. Next spring, definitely a guy that I hope to catch a game and watch. Just to see him in person, just that guy alone is just incredible with the L.A. Angels.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate that arguably the two best players in baseball are on a team that can't finish higher than third place in their own division. So what he's doing is incredible. You know, it's never, you've never really seen anything like this, especially in modern day baseball. But it's just sort of underscored by the fact that, number one, the Angels are just horrible. They're not a good team. And two, no one's really watching it. They're a West Coast team that don't play until, you know, 10 o'clock sometimes for folks on the East Coast. So I think that has a big thing to do with sort of these superstars that get sort of lost in translation. You know, obviously, you know, he's been on SportsCenter, he's been leading it. He's a big story right now. I think that's a big problem with baseball. And their best player, Mike Trout, he's been the best player of a generation for the last 10 years. And you could look in a mall and see him walk by and not know who he is because he just doesn't get exposure. He's not on a good team. You know, if he was on the Yankees, this would be completely different. You know, as much as I hate that narrative of the Yankees this, the Yankees that, all that kind of stuff, if your best players aren't on good teams in baseball, it's kind of hard to market them. And, you know, I feel like, or I fear rather, the same thing is happening with Shohei Ohtani. You know, it's just one of those things where he's just two superstars stuck on a really bad team, but they're doing incredible things, as you said.
And, you know, I always want to ask, you know, all my baseball people, you know, people that are more baseball inclined, obviously, than I am. But it seems like the easy thing with Ohtani and the longevity of his career and wanting to establish that would be, in my opinion, moving him into a reliever role or a closer role, because I feel like that's really what's wearing on him, is being a starter. And then, you know, they don't have, you know, the downside of that is they don't have starters for the Angels. So that's why Ohtani's consistently, you know, having to come in whenever he's available and available to come in and pitch. But the guy's throwing, you know, triple digits every single pitch for, you know, six, seven innings. And I just don't think that would be sustainable, especially still hitting, still playing right field after he's done pitching, all the things that he's doing. I think him moving to, you know, maybe LA, adding in some reliever or adding in some starters during the offseason and allowing Ohtani to be a reliever or a closer, can help, you know, sustain him, you know, not having pitching full on, you know, 100 pitches a game at 100 miles an hour. Just, I think, could help, you know, his shoulder and help his elbow not, you know, explode again and help him survive longer in his career.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with you. I don't think there's much to add to that. You know, he's kind of hard to sustain that for me. He's lucky that he's young right now. He can do that, but I don't think that's a very sustainable schedule for a guy like that, you know, batting like he is and throwing like he is consistently all the time. I think that could lead to a lot of injury problems, and I know the Angels wouldn't want that to happen to their superstar, so they're going to have to probably manage that a little bit better.
All right, and then real quick, Miles, before we let you go and call it quits for this week's episode, the match is officially scheduled for July 6th. Whose side are you on? You on Tom Brady and Phil Mickelson's side, or are you on the side with Bryson DeChambeau and Aaron Rodgers?
Oh, 100% Tom Brady and Phil Mickelson. First of all, I'm a big Tom Brady fan. I like everything he does, besides beat the Falcons in the Super Bowl. But I'm not a big Bryson DeChambeau fan. I'm also not a big Aaron Rodgers fan. I know you're a big fan, but he's a little bit too much of a diva for my taste, and so is Bryson DeChambeau. Dude complains at every second he can, and that video he posted of him doing whatever bicep curls those were was just pathetic. I mean, you can drink 20 protein shakes a day and get big, but your form is just pitiful on whatever the heck that was. I don't know what he's doing. So, yeah, I'm Team Tom Brady, Team Phil, and I'm also Team Brooks Koepka, so I like the meme.
Yeah, I think the whole world wanted to see, you know, Tom and Brooks Koepka against Bryson, or just Brooks Koepka against Bryson is what we all want to see. Put that, you know, on, yeah, make that as like a fight, you know, pre-fight to the next, you know, Jake Paul or Logan Paul main event. Put them in the ring and let them go at it.
Yeah, I wish they could have. It would have been great for golf, I think. I think this is already decent for golf, but this feud is something that I think golf needs.
Oh yeah, 100%. I saw that video, I was like, oh, this is perfect, you know, especially the weekend golf had, you know, 13 million watching that last round, watching Phil win, which was, you know, more than LeBron James' both playoff games so far.
Oh yeah.
In the NBA playoffs. So seeing all those fans watching it, that final round, and then seeing it all, you know, just go off on Twitter between Bryson and Brooks, and then now Phil Mickelson getting involved, now the match has been set up, and Tom Brady's just killing, flaming everybody with his memes right now, which is electric. But it's all great to see, and all great, I think, for the sport of golf.
Yeah, Mom, I agree with you 100%. It's something that the sport needs desperately.
Yeah, well, that's all the time we have, Miles, so thank you for joining. You are the first guest, and I believe we'll make this the official Season 3 episode 1 of the Slaw Sports Show. I believe you're right, you know, on schedule, so I'll probably just make this one the first episode of season 3. So it was a great first episode of the season, and thank you for coming on, being the first guest of the summer. It's been a blast, and you know, I had to crack some, you know, Atlanta jokes in there. So I apologize for that, but it had to be done. So thank you again
No
for
worries,
joining.
man. Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me on.
And then, so again, also thank you for everyone who tuned in to the episode. We'll be back next week, probably back on our normal scheduled episodes on Fridays. Maybe have another thing come out on Wednesday as well. But that's all we got for this time. So thank you all for tuning in.